Russian President Vladimir Putin tacitly calls his American counterpart a killer, firing back at Joe Biden for making a similar accusation against him. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says that the U.S. economic terrorism has failed to bring the Iranian nation to its knees. A new probe uncovers hundreds of cases of sexual abuse by the Catholic Church in Germany. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Zarif. Good to have you with us. Russian President Vladimir Putin tacitly calls his U.S. counterpart a killer, firing back at Joe Biden for making a similar remark about him. Putin says that people tend to view others as they actually see themselves. He also wished Biden, quote, good health. On Wednesday, Biden described Putin as a killer, adding that he will pay the price for meddling in the U.S. election last year. Biden's allegations followed an American intelligence report claiming that Putin had directed efforts to swing the U.S. presidential race in favor of former President Donald Trump. The Kremlin has dismissed the accusations, saying that the remarks show that Washington does not want to get its ties with Moscow back on track. Russian parliament members have also slammed Biden's comments as inaccessible and a watershed moment in the two countries' relations. From Philadelphia, I'm joined by Walter Smolarek, editor of the Liberation News. Good to have you with us, Walter. So how do you look at this? Russian MPs, they say this is a watershed moment. How serious should we take this? And especially at this time, when we have a new government of the White House and all those issues with Russia. So how is going to unfold in terms of relations between U.S. and Russia?
Well, I think that this does, of course, take on added significance, considering that the Biden administration is very new, that the every move made by Biden's top foreign policy people, by Biden himself, of course, is going to be watched very, very closely for indicators as to what the rest of his, presumably, 4 years in office will hold. So, this is the first sort of major volley, I think, launched by the Biden administration. It began with this report from the quote-unquote intelligence community in the United States alleging that Russia attempted to interfere in the 2020 election. This report was evidence-free. Essentially, it's the CIA and all these other notorious lying spy agencies telling the American people, once again, look, just trust us, just take our word for it, just like they did, for instance, in the run-up to the 2003 invasion of Iraq with weapons of mass destruction. So there's this sort of absurdity to it as well, but I think it is highly significant. I mean, the fact that the Russian ambassador was recalled for consultations, that is something that indicates the seriousness of this nature, of this matter. And I think that, a final piece of this is just the complete absurdity of a U.S. president calling another head of state a killer. I mean, Joe Biden is somebody who voted for the Iraq War, for instance, that led to the death of over a million Iraqis. Joe Biden has been a notorious warmonger. I mean, he was, part of the Obama administration that waged war and really shredded the fabric of Libyan society, sponsored the extremely reactionary fundamentalist rebels that tore apart Syrian society. The idea that Joe Biden feels empowered to go on TV and call another world leader a killer is just completely ridiculous, but it does have very serious diplomatic consequences, it appears.
That was Walter Smolarek, editor of Liberation News, who joined me from Philadelphia. The new U.S. administration is reportedly planning to review Washington's policies toward the Israeli occupation of Palestine. A memo revealed to an Arab Daily says that the Biden administration will push for a two-state solution based on pre-1967 lines with mutually agreed land swaps. The memo indicates the U.S. planning to announce a $15 million in aid package for Palestinians to deal with the COVID pandemic. Washington also planning to roll back some policies, such as U.S. legitimizing of Israeli settlement activities in the occupied territories. The previous administration under President Trump had given the green light to Israel to embark on its agenda, including settlement construction. Washington also relocated its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem al-Quds in a move that has sparked international outcry. Analyst McNapier believes that U.S. President Biden is seeking to strengthen Washington's alliance with Tel Aviv.
Biden will be much more cunning. He'll be much more strategic, and he will strengthen the U.S. alliance with Israel. America will grumble, will complain sometimes, but we know that this two-state solution and some future land swap simply means they can continue to dispossess the Palestinian people. And it underlines the fact that this is a strategic, deep alliance which has weathered many storms since 1967. Actually, I think America's ties to Israel will become stronger because it will delegate, it will subcontract the disciplining of states that America wants disciplined and subcontract the support for very unstable states like the Emirates and Saudi Arabia while America looks elsewhere. So the situation for the Palestinians looks as dire as it ever has done, paradoxically because of American weakness and therefore a greater reliance on its settler colonial project in the Middle East, Israel.
The Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif saying that the pressure imposed on the Iranian people has failed to bring the country to its knees.
Over the past year, we have once again shown our ironclad resilience. From confronting economic terrorism, targeting our access to food and medicine in order to bring us to our knees, to standing up to modern-day state terrorists who murdered the pioneers of our defense and scientific advancement. And all of this amid the deadliest pandemic humanity has seen in a century.
In his message congratulating the Persian New Year, Zarif said that the Iranian people have endured unjust suffering on a massive scale over the past years. He, however, said that Iranians are now stronger and determined more than any other time to decide their own destiny. He noted that Iranian economy is becoming immunized against outside coercion, with industrial production leading the country's growth. Zarif expressed that Iran's willing to expand engagement with its neighbors and beyond for building a better world. Okay, now from Hamburg, I'm joined by Bijan Tavassoli, who is a political commentator. Bijan, good to have you with us. So you heard what the Iranian foreign minister, how he commented regarding what has so many people called U.S. maximum pressure campaign or maximum maybe some failure campaign, as many call it in Iran. So apart from its negative impacts, looks like that it hasn't been bad in all aspects. There has been some advantages, a few of them Mr. Zarif mentioned. Let's have your comment on that.
Of course, sanctions are always a two-sided sword because, of course, they damage the Iranian economy and especially the Iranian people with restricted access to medicine and medical equipment, but at the same time, they also encourage the growth of local suppliers, of local providers of medicine. Iran has some of the best medicine companies in the world now because of the sanctions, because they were forced to buy from Iranian suppliers. So that was an opportunity. And then many other aspects of the economy, Iranian economies are growing. And this is something that I think will continue because of the good stewardship of the economy. But, you know, in the sports of boxing, there's a saying that you don't win by hitting the hardest. You win by suffering from more blows than your opponent and still be standing. And this is something that goes to the spirit of the Iranian people. They are a people that is capable of standing hardship, to stand up for their ideas. And this has been shown throughout the sanctions again and again. And this is, I think, what the foreign minister is commenting upon.
Thank you very much for your comments. From Hamburg, that was Bijan Tavassoli, political commentator. Now, Iran's capital city, Tehran, has hosted a webinar dubbed Terrorism and Media. The event sought to shed light on how the West has changed the definition of terrorism to serve its own interests in the region. Youssef Jalali has a report.
Who is a terrorist? These rights activists in Tehran say the West does not have a unified definition of the word terrorism. A case in point, they say, is the Syrian conflict, where the U.S. calls the terrorists opposition groups who aim to topple the Assad government. And Hezbollah, which is a popular party in Lebanon, is branded by the U.S. as a terrorist organization.
The U.S. and EU change the meaning of terrorism based on their interests. Anyone who stands against their adventurism in the region is called terrorist, and anyone who serves their interests is not a terrorist. General Soleimani was the number one nemesis of Daesh terrorists, but the U.S. assassinated him and called him a terrorist.
Having lost over 17,000 people in terror attacks, Iran regards itself a major victim of terrorism. Since Iran's 1979 Islamic Revolution, the U.S.-backed Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, or the MKO, has had a dark history of assassinations and bombings, targeting both Iranian statesmen and people.
The majority of terror victims in Iran were targeted by the MKO organization. In 2012, the U.S. removed the MKO from its list of terrorist organizations. The move is still regarded by Iranians as a clear example of U.S.'s dual take on terrorism.
In 2012, and after the U.S. and Europe delisted the MKO as a terrorist entity, the group was relocated from a U.S. military base in Iraq to Albania and France. Ever since, the MKO has held regular meetings with American and European officials. This example easily spills the beans on the U.S.'s intention and why it is not willing to call the MKO terrorists.
Iranians abhor the MKO terrorists because they do not represent Iranians' ideas. But the U.S. doesn't care about what Iranians think. The MKO terrorists serve the U.S. interests. That's all they need to be approved by Americans.
I lost my father in a terror attack carried out by the MKO terrorists 40 years ago. My dad is one of the 12,000 Iranians killed by Mujahideen-e-Khalq. So it's clear who the U.S. is supporting. The U.S. and the terrorists are on the same team.
The webinar was held simultaneously with the 46th session of the United Nations Human Rights Council. Organizers of the Tehran webinar say this concurrence relays a message to the UN. That is, an action toward the double standards by the West on terrorism is translated into a green light for more rights violations by the U.S. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Okay, now let's now go live to Babda. It's a presidential palace in Beirut, Lebanon. We hear in the absence of the government, there has been some controversy between the officials, and Mariam Saleh is there live for us. Let's see how the negotiations have been going on between the prime minister and the president there. Mariam, over to you.
Well, we had a positive step, we may say, today with this meeting between Prime Minister designate Saad Hariri and the President Michel Aoun. Now, this comes right after a speech by President Michel Aoun, who was quite harsh on the Prime Minister designate, saying that either Saad Hariri forms the cabinet based on constitutional charter, or he should step aside, leave away for someone else who probably can form this cabinet. Now, today we had a meeting. It was brief, but we do know that it was weighty. It was very significant. They agreed both that we do have a catastrophe here in the country, and the only way of stopping this deterioration, this economic, socio-economic and political collapse in the country, is by actually forming a new cabinet. So they both agreed on that. However, they failed to agree on this today. This is just part of the procrastination that we live in Lebanon on a daily basis. So basically, the state of affairs is quite frozen. It is the same. We have a dire socioeconomic crisis in the country. We have people who are blocking roads on a daily basis, people who are angry at the situation. The price of the dollar is getting even more drastic, and it's become in a state where people cannot deal with it. People cannot buy even necessary basic food stuff that they need. So this is one of the major problems that we have. Now, Prime Minister Saad Hariri did say that we agreed that the only way that we can stop this catastrophe and this collapse is by actually forming a cabinet. That is one positive step that we can say. However, they failed to agree on this today. He did mention also, however, that there will be a follow-up meeting next Monday to pave the way for talks, but he did not say that we should have a formation of cabinet on Monday. He just said that we will agree on how it is being formed. Now, of course, the differences are so many. We have differences whether they are based on regional issues or regional relations between Saad Hariri and Saudi Arabia and other players, but also the President Michel Aoun is perhaps being insisting on the number of ministers, on the fact that he considers, based on his presidential oath, that there should be standards based on the national charter, which mentions and stipulates that there should not be a marginalization of any sect, and that the cabinet should represent all sects until we can cancel this sectarian system that we have in our politics.
Okay, we hope things will work out in Lebanon. We'll hear good news soon. Thank you very much for that, Maryam Saleh, our correspondent in Baghdad, the presidential palace in Beirut. Now, moving on, the Armenian prime minister has announced the early parliamentary elections on the 20th of June as his country is grappling with a political deadlock. Nikol Pashinyan said that the move is the best way out of the country's current political crisis. That announcement is made amid the continued standoff between the prime minister and the armed forces. In February, Armenia's army chief, Onik Gasparian, asked Pashinyan to step down, but the prime minister turned down a call and sacked him. The prime minister has been under fire for his handling of last year's conflict with Azerbaijan over the dispute of Nagorno-Karabakh region. The six-week war ended with Russia-brokered peace deal, which is seen by many Armenians as a disastrous outcome. An independent study by the Roman Catholic Church has revealed hundreds of cases of sexual violence allegedly committed by clergy and laymen in the German city of Cologne since 1975. The damning report found over 200 alleged cases of sexual assault and 314 victims between 1975 and 2018. The report says that more than half of the victims were minors under the age of 14. Two Cologne church officials have been suspended over covering up abuse cases. A report in 2018 found that some 1,600 clergymen had committed some type of sexual attack against more than 3,600 minors, mostly boys, between 1946 and 2014. The revelations matter pedophile scandals in countries like Australia, Chile, France, and the United States. The British Health Secretary says that the European Union will face consequences if it violates COVID-19 vaccine supply contracts.
We fully expect those contracts to be delivered on, because there are very significant consequences to breaking contract law.
Now, Matt Hancock says that all countries need to respect the law, expressing confidence that the European Union will live up to its commitments. Hancock was responding to an EU threat to block vaccine exports to Britain. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said that the bloc may halt exports of COVID vaccines to the UK unless it starts shipping shots to the EU. Brussels has accused Britain, the main producer of AstraZeneca vaccines, of imposing a de facto ban on vaccine exports, a claim that London has rejected. Now, the row happens while the EU is facing an acute shortage of COVID-19 jabs. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
The list of countries temporarily suspending the use of the coronavirus vaccine made by AstraZeneca has grown after France, Germany, Italy, and Spain announced they were taking the precautionary step in light of reports of possible links to blood clots. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Andrea Germanus Ryder. This article is published under the heading More EU Nations Suspend Use of AstraZeneca Vaccine Over Blood Clotting Concerns. Stay tuned for more. The list of countries temporarily suspending the use of the coronavirus vaccine made by AstraZeneca has grown after France, Germany, Italy, and Spain announced they were taking the precautionary step in light of reports of possible links to blood clots. The announcements came a day after the Netherlands and Ireland announced they were suspending AstraZeneca jabs. A number of other countries, including Denmark, Norway, Bulgaria, and Indonesia, also made that decision in recent days. The Democratic Republic of Congo delayed its vaccine rollout in light of the reports. The moves by some of Europe's largest and most populous countries, Reuters reported, will deepen concerns about the slow rollout of vaccines in the region, which has been plagued by shortages due to problems producing vaccines, including AstraZeneca's. German Health Minister Jens Spahn said the decision was based on the recommendation of the nation's vaccine regulator, the Paul Ehrlich Institute. Today's decision is a purely precautionary measure, said Spahn. Dutch Health Minister Hugo de Jong made a similar pronouncement, saying, "We can't allow any doubts about the vaccine." AstraZeneca, for its part, insists its vaccine, produced jointly with the University of Oxford and authorized for use in over 70 countries, is safe. In a statement released recently, the company said there was no evidence showing a causal link between its vaccine and thrombotic events. It also pointed to there being reports of just 37 cases of either deep vein thrombosis or pulmonary embolism noted after vaccination. Around 17 million people in the EU and UK have now received our vaccine, and the number of cases of blood clots reported in this group is lower than the hundreds of cases that would be expected among the general population, said Anne Taylor, AstraZeneca's chief medical officer. She added, the nature of the pandemic has led to increased attention in individual cases, and asserted the company was going beyond the standard practices for safety monitoring of licensed medicines in reporting vaccine events to ensure public safety. The World Health Organization is cautioning nations against pausing their vaccine drives in the midst of the pandemic. As of today, there is no evidence that the incidents are caused by the vaccine, and it is important that vaccination campaigns continue so that we can save lives and stem severe disease from the virus, WHO spokesperson Christian Lindmeier said. In a statement recently, the European Medicines Agency similarly stressed its belief that the AstraZeneca vaccine was safe and said it's probing the reports of the adverse health reactions. Events involving blood clots, some with unusual features such as low numbers of platelets have occurred in a very small number of people who received the vaccine, said the agency. The vaccine suspensions came as cases of coronavirus in Europe are surging, and as CNN reported, mark the latest example of the AstraZeneca vaccine dividing Europe. The outlet continued, the episodes mark the latest example of the AstraZeneca vaccine dividing Europe. In the space of a few weeks, several EU countries have angrily rebuked the firm for failing to provide its full amount of promised doses. Kasten walked back doubts about its efficacy in older people, blocked shipments of the vaccine from leaving the continent, and now halted the rollouts over blood clot concerns. The continent's newest concerns over the vaccine come at a difficult moment, with a third wave of infection threatening to grip Europe 1 year after the pandemic began. The AstraZeneca vaccine does not yet have approval for use in the U.S., though the Biden administration is holding onto a stockpile for quicker rollout should that approval come. Reuters reported recently that emergency authorization could come in April. Amid the suspensions is sustained criticism that wealthier nations have been vaccinated their citizens far more quickly than those in poorer nations. Wealthier nations, including the U.S., are also blocking an India and South Africa-led proposal for the World Trade Organization to temporarily waive intellectual property rights rules to enable greater production of coronavirus vaccines. Anna Marriott, health policy manager at Oxfam, a member of People's Vaccine Alliance, stressed the need for global cooperation to bring the worldwide public health crisis to an end. It is unforgivable that while people are literally fighting for breath, rich country governments continue to block what could be a vital breakthrough in ending this pandemic for everyone in rich and poor countries alike, Marriott said in a statement recently. During a pandemic that is devastating lives across the planet, said Marriott, governments should be using their powers now, not tomorrow, to remove intellectual property rules and ensure pharmaceutical companies work together to share technology and fix raw material shortages, all of which are standing in the way of a massive scale-up in production.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
Aysel Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatil Jiran, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zayd Al Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Chapter 7 is an interesting topic, talking about clothes and the etiquette of dressing. We understand that clearly, as human beings, we want to cover ourselves, not only for the sake of staying modest and concealing our private parts, which is in Islam something wajib and obligatory, but also for the sake of presentation, that we want to be dressed in such a way where, you know, we know that it's going to be appealing, not only for myself but also for those who are around me. Is that a bad thing in Islam? Absolutely not. Islam encourages you, whether you are a male or whether you are a female, to look presentable, to look nice, to look good, to be elegant in the way you dress. You know, one of the hadiths that is mentioned here is you should be like a shama bayna nas. Shama is like a beauty spot. You know, shama bayna nas. You should be like a beauty spot among the people, where people, you know, look at you and say, MashaAllah, what an elegant person he is, she is. Unfortunately, what we can see is that sometimes someone who wants to be religious all of a sudden assumes that they need to be wearing scruffy clothes and old clothes and become very daggy or whatever kind of word that is used these days, not paying any attention whatsoever to their clothing. You know, they wear sweaters, and even when it comes to an important event or an occasion, so much so that people start looking at them and saying, is that what a religious person needs to do, needs to be? But you look at these ahadith, and it's always reminding us about how we need to make sure that we are the most presentable. Even according to these ahadith that I'm going to be sharing with you, even when you're all by yourself and it's a Friday, you should be wearing elegant clothing. When you're with your spouse, you should be wearing elegant clothing and nice clothing. And that's why it's extremely important when it does come to this topic of clothing and libas.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام همونطوری که این رو گفته دارم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری و ثواب داره
امام has mentioned both of these subjects. The very imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دقل ثواب داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قد گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون اینم هم امام گفته دیگه
When growing wheat take some in your hand and say these prayers These are what the very imam has mentioned
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی
We lack this second volume in Islamic world
Imam Ali alayhi salam, he makes sure that one issue is emphasized on, if I could say, and that is that the clothing that you're wearing is not based on how expensive it is, but based on quality. And we can see this repeated in the hadith that you should be looking at quality. If it means that it needs to be a little bit more expensive than something else, then go for it, as long as it is something that is good quality. And also something nadhif, which basically means clean, which basically means you don't need to be wearing something new. all the time, as long as it is something clean. He says, النظيف من الثياب. Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, clothes that are clean, يذهب الهم, will remove your sorrow, والحزن, and your grief. وهو طهور للصلاة, and it is a form of purity for your salah. That's why clothing in general is something very, very important. And, you know, we need to make sure that, of course, we're always covering our private parts as well. You know, there are some ahadith that mention that even when you're in the shower, when you're bathing, when you are, for example, in the river or a lake or somewhere like that, always make sure that you are covered, that you are covered. We know that in Islam, it is prohibited for you to be exposing, showing, revealing your private parts to anybody, whether it be your parents, whether it be your child, whether it be your sibling, whoever it may be, unless it is your spouse, or unless when it comes to some kind of medical condition, it is to the physician. And of course that also has certain rules and regulations as well. But in general, we understand that there is always going to be that notion of us, you know, choosing and selecting clothes not only for the sake of concealing ourselves, but also for the sake of iffah, for us to remain chaste, for us to have that level of dignity. Which is why, you know, we shouldn't be selecting certain clothes that are not going to be befitting for you as a mu'min, or you as a mu'minah, male or female. You know, and that's where the whole topic of hijab comes into place. You know, hijab for men and hijab for women, and things like that. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
An investigation has revealed that three Palestinian fishermen martyred over the weekend in an offshore blast near the besieged Gaza Strip had encountered an explosive-laden Israeli drone that fell into the sea and blew up in their nets. We're prepared for an article written by Wafa al-Udaini under the heading "A Lack of International Action Against Israel Murder of Gaza Fishermen." Please stay with us to hear more about Wafa al-Udaini's article. The Israeli regime has been held responsible for the martyrdom of three Palestinian fishermen, which may lead to a new round of fighting in the Gaza Strip. So before the Zionist regime plays victim, what was the significance of the event which just took place? The Ministry of Interior in the Gaza Strip stated in a press conference that the three slain Palestinian fishermen attained martyrdom as a result of an explosive Israeli quadcopter last Sunday. The investigation that was conducted led to the Gazan authorities to consider three possible causes of the accident or crime: an accidental Israeli explosive resulting from explosives left in the sea, a Palestinian test rocket that may have hit the fishermen's boat, and the Israeli Navy that may have shot at them. Firstly, the investigation revealed that the boat carrying the slain fishermen was outside the range of the rocket fired, hence this hypothesis was disregarded. It was also found that about half an hour before the explosion, two other fishermen had found an Israeli quadcopter in their nets and had handed it over to maritime police. The Gazan Ministry of Interior stated that the quadcopter had an explosive device attached to it. Another quadcopter was found in the fishing net of the three martyred fishermen and was found to be completely identical to the one found by the other fishermen. The spokesman for the Ministry of Interior in the Gaza Strip, Iyad al-Bouzoum, said in the press conference that the forensic report on the bodies of the three martyred fishermen indicated that they were assassinated by a result of a severe explosive shock by a non-fragmentation device, and no metal fragments were found in their bodies. Iyad al-Bouzoum further added that this confirms that the explosion was caused by a device similar to the package carried by an Israeli quadcopter drone, which was found by fishermen half an hour before the martyrdom of the slain fishermen near the site of the explosion. The Minister of the Interior then released an animated video recreating what had happened and distributed pictures of the remains of the quadcopter. This was then circulated throughout Palestinian media and has been used to demonstrate to the people of Gaza what had occurred. Two brothers, Muhammad Hijazi Saleh Al-Laham and Zakaria Hijazi Saleh Al-Laham, and their cousin Yahya Mustafa Saleh Al-Laham, were murdered during their work on their boat in the Khan Yunis coast in a mysterious explosion. They were all married with children and their only source of livelihood came from fishing. Mustafa Al-Laham, the father of Yahya, one of the martyrs, said that, "We are satisfied with the ministry's investigation and we call on all international institutions and bodies to work to protect Palestinian fishermen and to punish Israeli regime for its crimes against us." He also added that Yahya is the father of newborn twins. Abu Ahmad, Muhammad and Zakaria's father, said that Muhammad is 28 and has 5 children, and Zakaria is 25, a father of one. Abu Ahmad added, painfully, that they had been fishing for 10 years and depend on it for their livelihood. The grief-stricken father and uncle also wished to try and sue the occupation forces in the International Criminal Court, the ICC. Extracting a fee from the Israeli regime, which would go towards helping the impoverished families who are left now without any source of income. The Gaza Strip has approximately 4,000 fishermen, of whom only 800 work on some 700 boats. According to official Palestinian statistics, approximately 70,000 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip make a living directly or indirectly from fishing. 85% of them suffer from extreme poverty in light of the persecution of the occupation, the scarcity of resources, the exorbitant prices of fuel, and their inability to upgrade their boats with modern equipment. As the occupation prevents materials needed to build boats or fix them from entering Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Resistance faction stated that they hold Israel fully responsible for the murder of the 3 Palestinian fishermen, and that this was considered a violation of the ceasefire agreement that is between resistance factions and the Israeli occupation. They stated that such crimes should not be tolerated and remain unpunished. The analyst and writer Iyad Al-Ghara confirms that the occupation bears responsibility for the crime of murdering the 3 fishermen a few days ago. It is part of the hidden security war as the occupation seeks to cause a security defect. The occupation denied its responsibility for targeting the Palestinian fishermen immediately after the incident. But after the Ministry of Interior in the Gaza Strip released the results of the investigation, supported by evidence, they have remained silent and are failing to produce any comment. Iyad Al-Ghara also stressed that the occupation denying has no value with the available evidence. "It is a misleading denial about not carrying out an attack while it Israel traps an area in which Palestinian fishermen have to operate through waters covered with booby-trapped drones." According to Nizar Ayash, the spokesperson for the Fishermen's Ministry, at least 18 Palestinian fishermen have been shot and martyred, and 40 have been injured by the Israeli naval gunboats during the blockade of the Gaza Strip. Hundreds of Palestinian fishermen have also been detained. If an escalation now occurs as a result of Israel's measures against fishermen in Gaza, it should be understood that the crimes of the siege are the main factor. Israel maintains a heavy naval presence off the coast of the impoverished Palestinian enclave, the Gaza Strip, severely affecting the livelihood of some 4,000 fishermen and at least 1,500 more people involved in the fishing industry in the Gaza Strip. Over the past few years, Israeli forces have carried out more than 100 attacks on Palestinian boats, arresting Palestinian fishermen and confiscating their boats. The Gaza Strip has been under an Israeli land, air and sea blockade since June of 2007. This has caused a decline in the standard of living, as well as unprecedented levels of unemployment and unrelenting poverty among Gaza's population. Israel has also launched three major wars against the enclave since 2008, martyring thousands of Palestinians in Gaza and shattering the impoverished territory's already poor infrastructure.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kHz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Coverage of Nowruz in Arabic English Radio
on Saturday, March 20th, around 9:30 UTC.
Stay with us.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina wa maulana Abil Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. First and foremost, we must send our congratulations to the Imam of the time, Imam al-Sahib al-Asr wa-Zaman, on this being the day that is recorded to be the birth of his uncle, that valiant soldier of Islam, the guard of the haram and of the household of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, Hazrat Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam, this devout servant of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wa sallam, this champion of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wa sallam. You know, there's a lot about Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam that we do not know. There's not much that has been recorded about, you know, his sayings or his life. He's always been in the background. But when it comes to action, it's a very beautiful thing if you think about it, that Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam doesn't have much words that have been recorded, other than obviously those statements and speeches that he gave on the day of Ashura or in that period of Muharram. But his actions spoke so, you know, so vast, that his actions still today shake the thrones of those oppressors throughout the world, if we are able to truly understand his actions, if we are truly able to even slightly follow in his footsteps in terms of sincerity, in terms of devotion, in terms of complete self-sacrifice for the Imam of his time. Something very important. A lesson that, if we take no other lessons from the life of Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam, this is the lesson that we need to take. The concept of putting the Imam in front of you at every single instance. On this day, being the birth of this son of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, there's a very beautiful tradition that has been recorded in the month of Ramadan, in Shahr Ramadan, when Imam Ali alayhi salam was struck. Obviously, we know that he was struck on the 19th, and on the 20th he was with his family. So it's probably around this time. It is reported that the Imam alayhi salam called for his son Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam. Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam was a young man at that time. Obviously, the Imam then put him in the care of his older brother Imam al-Hassan alayhi salam. So Abu al-Fadl Abbas, already being a war veteran, a person who fought in Siffin, he was not, you know, an ordinary youth. He was a youth who grew up in the lap of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. So the Imam calls him and says, "Waladi, oh my dear son, you know, very soon, on the day of judgment, on the day of Yawm al-Qiyamah, by seeing you, my eyes will become bright and my sight will become enlightened." We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we are just like this, that when the Imam sees us in this world, hopefully, inshallah, in this world, that he is happy and he becomes brightened. His face becomes brightened by our sight. Inshallah, until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
Debate.